Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. We also welcome our radio and internet audiences, and we welcome everyone to listen to us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. My name is Dr. Patrick O'Reilly, Chair of the Psychology Forum, and I'm genuinely delighted to introduce today's speaker, Ms. Shannon Weber. Ms. Weber believes you can thrive at the intersection of empathy and resilience. She leads efforts to end HIV by day and hangs anonymous love notes in public spaces with her three teenagers at night. She is a serial social entrepreneur, having launched several HIV-informed sexual and reproductive health initiatives that have served thousands locally and impacted tens of thousands around the globe. She has a master's degree of social work from Tulane University and received the 2018 UCSF Chancellor's Award for Public Service. So please welcome Ms. Weber.
Thank you, Patrick, and thank you all for being here. I'm so excited. I can't wait to get to know you. This is going to be really fun. So when I was 23 years old, and I was just out of social work graduate school, I was working at the Crisis Hotline of Houston. And at that time, the Crisis Hotline of Houston was one of the last 24-hour hotlines in the U.S. that was completely staffed by volunteers. And so you can think about this from a management and volunteer recruitment perspective. This is a lot of people that you need to have to answer these phone calls 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And the volunteers would go through a 55-hour training, and then they would commit to work a 4-hour shift every week for the entire year, including overnight and weekend shifts. So you can imagine who these incredible people were who would show up to volunteer. A lot of them had connection with the crisis hotline work. We had former callers to the hotline. We had people who had lost someone in their life. We had a lot of students or people who were changing professions midlife and wanted to learn more about helping others, and they would come there to do training. But bottom line, these are giant-hearted givers who would come to do this work. And so my job as coordinator of the hotline was to make sure the operations went smoothly, but it was also really a volunteer retention job. You wanted to make sure people felt good about the work that they were doing and that they were going to come back and do their shift the next week, because if they didn't, we backed them up. We have no problem working some of the shifts for them, but obviously this whole operation would work because of these over 100 volunteers. And we'd take 65,000 calls a year with this volunteer infrastructure. And I began to notice a theme emerging from some of the volunteers, and particularly this one group. We're nearing the end of the 55-hour training, and as part of like checking them out to go to work on the lines, we let them know these are some hard and fast rules that we have here. So we don't disclose our location. It's an anonymous location because we have people who are there overnight. We don't meet callers. We don't, and there was a few of these don'ts. And some people didn't like hearing these hard and fast rules, and they would push back and say, well, if we really want to help people, well, why can't we go and give them food? Well, if someone needs more than I can do to help them on their phone, well, then I know so-and-so at this organization. I'm going to make sure that they're going to get there. And I could start to feel this mess, this messiness that was happening. And I was doing my best to think back how to share with them, how to stay within like the boundaries of what we'd created at the hotline that we really knew worked, that we really were able to help people on these 15-minute calls in this period of crisis to get them connected with resources, but not to kind of spill over into what was not our work. And so in that space, I drew this framework. And this is a framework that I'm going to share with you tonight that has helped me over the last 25 years to think about how is it that I show up and help other people and do so in a way that I don't get scared of getting lost in the process or that it doesn't become too messy and I become over-involved or overwhelmed, which isn't to say that I do it right all the time. That's one of the messages of tonight, is that it's a journey and that different ways that work for us at some times in life shift for us, and we need to be able to reconfigure those things for other times in life. And in that way, this framework is very adaptable. But to begin with, I want to know a little bit more about you. And this also comes from the work of training the crisis hotline volunteers, which is we'd always go around in the beginning and talk about why is it that we do this work? Because we need to understand in so many ways, who are we if we're wounded healers that we're coming and we might have things that we're still working on, which is fine because we still have to show up and do the work. But it also helps remind us why we have this connection so that when we make a mistake or when it becomes hard or when things go wrong, that we can return to our why of why we do this work. So you each have some note cards, yes, and some pens, and thank you so much for passing them out. And so what I would love for you to do is to write on your note card why it is that you show up. Why is it that you show up? What's your connection? What's that draw? What gets you to put yourself forward and take that risk?
In life or in this talk?
You know, what do you feel most comfortable with? How big do you want to go?
I show up here at work.
Yeah, and in the place in which you want to, so I would say, where is it that you feel most engaged? So I don't suspect that it's here, although I hope I'm thrilling you right now. So I would imagine that it's probably at work. It might be at home. It might be in your community. It might be that next job that you're going to have if you're training for something. And then when you have your why written down, I would love for you to turn to someone who's sitting next to you. And a lot of you came with friends, which is awesome. So cool if you tell a friend, but even better if you tell someone you don't know what your first name is and why you show up. All right, awesome. So it sounds like the right people are in the room. And it sounds like this is going very well for some of you. So there's some nice dinner locations afterwards where you can carry this on. That went extremely well. And so I wish that I could hear too and be more connected with you around why you show up. And I want to, I did make a pretty broad assumption, and I'm going to suppose that a lot of why we choose to show up is because that we want to create change. And the change that we want to create, it might be something inside ourselves, it might be something in our home, our community, in the world, even could be big change that we want to create. But underneath so many of our whys is this desire to create change. And I point this out because in order to create change, you have to have empathy. And so then this is the part in which we can start to get stuck and confused, right? So we want to create change and we need to have empathy. And how do we do that in a way that is real and we're going to have that connection with other people? So in order to be empathetic, we have to go on a journey and we have to be able to see the world through someone else's eyes. So this requires that we leave the comfort of our own worldview and our own beliefs and all the things that we believe are true so that we can see this expansive view of someone else's vision. It requires that we can identify what our biases and assumptions are so that we can put those aside so that we can empathetically see the world through someone else's eyes. And I'm going to suggest that a lot of times we're empathetic like these unicorns. Like, we're good. We frame that work and we put it up and we show it to people. And in fact, we haven't always put our biases and assumptions aside. And so with this, that remains some distance between us and the other person, this connection that we want to create. Another way that we can get confused with empathy is that we can think that it's sympathy. And there's actually nothing wrong with sympathy. Sometimes sympathy is the thing that comes to us fast. But sympathy is a more shallow version of it. And it actually is a safe way for us to think that we're caring about the other person. Because with sympathy, we don't really have to leave behind our own everything we think is right. And we get to tell ourselves a story that we're doing something because we've said something very sympathetic. I don't know how many of you have like needed an empathetic response from someone and what you got was sympathy, but we know right away when it's very sympathetic. We feel like we've gotten patted on the head. We feel very far away from that other person. And so if we want to create change, you know, we want to actualize this why in our life, we have to be able to leave that sympathy land and go to the empathy land. And so I'm going to suggest to you that being empathetic, which a lot of times gets talked about as a soft skill, is actually really muscular and that it takes a lot of strength. And I also want to bring that vision and thought to you, because if it's muscular, it means that it's something that we can build. So sometimes people might say too, oh, I wasn't born that way, or I didn't, you know, that's just not part of who I am. But the reality is that about 90% of an empathetic response is something that's learned or a skill that can be built. There is a genetic piece, but it's very small. And so I share this to say that if we want to be able to actualize our why, we want to create change, then we want to figure out how to be empathetic. And so to do that, we're going to build this muscle. And I also share this vision of empathy being very muscular and taking this embodiment, because it takes energy. And there's a limited amount of emotional labor that you can do in a given day or time. And so we have to also be strategic and mindful about where is it that we do that emotional labor? And is it towards the change that we want to make? And are we doing it in a way that's sustainable so that we can keep showing up? So I'm going to share with you, now that we have these background kind of definitions for what empathy is and why we want to be empathetic, the framework that as I was back in that hotline training, it was back in the days of the overhead projector and those, you know, clear, now I'm forgetting the names of those sheets, and they were very precious. You got to clean them all afterwards and dry them and put them back in the box. Yeah. And so I was like, this was my big idea to share with them this vision of how I had about how to show up for other people in this very muscular and strong way, but how to not get lost. And so the first part of this framework is this misconnection. And you can see in the misconnection, quite literally, you and me are not overlapping. And there's nothing wrong with a misconnection if we don't care to make change. Like, this is how we operate for a whole bunch of life. We go on the bus this way, we go to the grocery store. I mean, it's fine. So there's no judging the misconnection. But where the misconnection becomes problematic is if someone's asked us for something and we respond in a misconnection way. It can be very disappointing, potentially for both of us, but for sure for the person who asked for help. And it also can be problematic if we're wanting to create change and that's how we engage with someone, because there's no chance for this empathy to be exchanged, right? There's no true connection that happens. And misconnections can happen for people who have a low EQ. And that's not my general sense of people who signed up for this session, or the way you all were chatting in the beginning about your why. So this is not normally our world, people who are empaths and givers. But it can happen to us when we're not paying attention. It's like, how many times have we been on our phone and like someone we work with or our kid asked us for help and we just knew we weren't paying attention, so we had a misconnection. So it can happen to people because they're not paying attention. But it also can happen to us because of fear. We have a fear about what happened before when we engaged in some way, or because of biases or assumptions that we have. We go, oh, for that kind of person, or if I engage in that way, and so we've created this barrier. So it's just something interesting for us to think about ourselves. If we're wanting to engage with someone and create change and we're having this misconnection and we don't normally, maybe what's going on our side? And then a second part of the framework is this enmeshed or this martyr. And in this part of the framework, it's less clear where you began and where me ends, right? And especially true over time, this becomes very blurred. And what's super tricky about the enmeshed is that in the beginning, it feels really good. So it feels really good for me who's helping, because like, I'm just jumping all in and I'm going to do all these things for you. And I have this long to-do list and the story in my head is going really fast. And that feels super exciting to me. And it feels really good for the person being helped, because they're being told these things are going to get fixed for you. And I'm there for you. And these big promises are being made. And what's problematic about this is that it's not sustainable over time. So I wonder if any of you can imagine now a time that you were in this, and then that's that stuck feeling that you have, and then you're wondering, how did I get out of this? It was only with my best intentions that I got here, but I've now said things, promised things, alluded to things that I really can't come through on. And so this enmeshed framework, if we're engaged in that way, it will ultimately fall apart, and it can do so in a really dramatic way because things blow up. You know, it's just over time because it's not fixed. Or we can figure out ways to become less enmeshed with folks by sometimes getting help doing that, or being able to restructure our boundaries. So if misconnection is not going to have the empathy exchange, then we're not going to create change. And enmesh is something that's not sustainable and we're going to get lost in, then I'm going to suggest this way of engaging that's called the compassionate witness. And if you see the circles for the compassionate witness, you can see there's a small part of you and a small part of me that's overlapping. And in that space is where empathy and connection occur. The role of the compassionate witness is to show up and create space for someone and say, I see you and you are not alone. And the compassionate witness doesn't have to know the answer. They might be a resourceful observer of someone else's journey, but their real job is to see, have that space and to witness the other. If empathy is that feeling or experience we have of seeing the world through someone else's eyes, then compassion is us acting on our empathy. And that act of being compassionate is actually a gift. That is the showing up. So I want to pause there and see if anyone has questions about the framework, the misconnection, the enmeshed or martyr, or the compassionate witness. You guys are so smart. Okay, well, we'll have questions at the end. We're going to have 15 minutes of questions at the end, so it's fine. Well, so what I would like to do then is give three strategies that can help us in showing up for others as compassionate witnesses. Yeah, good. Okay. So years ago, I gave myself this challenge. In fact, it was with my friend Sandra, who's here in the audience, that I think maybe you did some too. I don't want to be taking all the credit, friend. But anyways, so that I would go on these, what I'm now calling these empathy adventures. And in doing so, I had no attachment to the outcome because we called it stamping our passport. So like if something went poorly, we could just be like, well, stamped the passport. Don't have to try that one again. Got some information. And it reminded me of when I was young and I was in college and working in Europe. And I would like go out of my way to go to another country just so I could get that stamp in my passport, right? And so in this way, we can give ourselves permission to have new experiences with expanding our empathy without necessarily having to commit to it long term. And also this metaphor of going on the empathy adventure journey is that we're going to notice things. Like, again, back to when I would go on, backpacking in Europe, I was like writing things in my journal, right? And taking pictures about what happened and who I met and, you know, how much a Diet Coke cost and all these things. I'm like taking notice. And so one of the things that we do as a compassionate witness is that we notice a lot about ourselves as we go on these empathy adventures. And in fact, the task, one of the biggest tasks of a compassionate witness is to know a lot less about what other people should do and a lot more about how we go on the empathy adventures. So in fact, investing in our own selves and knowing ourselves and how we go on empathy adventures is a huge part of how we're going to build that muscular structure of being able to show up for others. So I created this empathy adventures passport. But I'll have a slide at the end with the website. All this stuff's on the website and you can download it. And it's also in the book. But I'm a huge fan of this structure of thinking about how we go on empathy adventures. And also they can be super helpful for chatting with a friend or debriefing with our team or with a supervisor about how it's going for us. And so let's look at the different parts. One, we're identifying what the adventure is. And one, it's important to name and call what the adventure is because that helps to start give shape to our circles, right? And then we start to identify what's the internal narrative that I have. And this helps us to like acknowledge our own experience with it, but also to see next, are there biases or assumptions that I have about going on this journey? And maybe for a moment, what is it like for me to write it in that space and could I leave it there? Then what did you notice about your body? And I'm really big on having this check-in with the body to see how we're doing on the adventure because our body is giving us clues all the time so that it can help us the next time. So the more we stay attuned to how our body feels on these adventures, we can start to understand the difference between the fear that is you've gone too far and you need to pull back from the excitement that is, oh my gosh, you're in that right place and you've just expanded your worldview a little bit. The clues our body tells us can also help us to feel when we're getting enmeshed, or it obviously gives us clues when we have a misconnection. So being able to note how we feel it, and everyone has their own experience with how they experience it in their body. There's no judging any of it. And then our takeaways from going on the empathy adventure? Like, is that one you want to go on again? You going back to Liechtenstein, or was that just a one stamp? You don't need to go another time. And then very importantly, how I return to myself. Because one of the fears that we have about being more expansive or showing up in new ways for people is that we're going to get lost. And so we have to give ourselves little breadcrumbs or clues about how we come back to our core. And I'm going to suggest that for real empathy adventures, we never come back the same. We're always changed by them. But we have a map as to how we can get back to ourself and return to our own worldview and the way we see things in the world. And then... Well, now my little thing's going to be a little out of order, but I'm going to say, like, the final takeaway piece for this is just to always be curious. Like, really, none of it is judgment. I mean, how many times do you go on a trip, even if it's some giant disaster and all kinds of things happen, you still had memories from the trip. You still have funny stories, right? We rarely regret going on some sort of vacation or changing up our experience in that way. And the same really should be true for empathy adventures. I mean, they sometimes bruise. And they sometimes hurt, and we sometimes have to get help because things have gone wrong. But there's always learnings for us to take forward. So what I want to do is back up to the empathy venture, and then you could take your card, and you can jot down and also just some little tips from this. I wonder for folks if you had a scenario already come to your mind when I was talking, and if you did, then you work on that one. So sometimes people have a situation that they're already stuck with right now. And then that's a good one you could start to write down, like, oh, how are these things I know? And you're going to chat with your neighbor again. And two, if you didn't have something that came to mind when I was presenting it, then you could think about something that you would like to do, an empathy adventure in which you'd like to be more expansive. And that could be around a new task at work, a new person that you want to engage with, a subject matter that you wanted to grow your ability to feel adept with. Yeah? So if you want to take some little notes for yourself, and then you could chat with your neighbor. It could be a new neighbor if you want. If it was really going great with your other neighbor, you can keep going. All right, awesome. So it sounds like folks have some good adventures they're going on, or they just went on, yes? And there were some questions, but mostly we're having yes, yes? Good adventures? Okay, great. So the next skill or tool or tip that I'm going to talk about is, in addition to then those empathy adventures and really knowing yourself and how you go on then and come back, the second skill that we want to have is being able to build containers for experiences. And I think the containers concept is sometimes challenging for folks. So I think about describing it to you like this. So think about, for food, how many different kinds of containers do you have in your house? You have the disposable one you send home with people with leftovers that you don't care if you see it again. You have the disposable one that doesn't leak, you take to work with your lunch. You have the everyday plate. You have fancy plates. I mean, if you were having a wedding, you would get different containers for food, right? If there's a birthday party, we get a different container. So we have no problem getting these containers for food that meet each scenario. And we might sometimes really care about the color and the weight. And there's fancy containers. You can spend a lot of money. You can get them at the thrift store. They all have the same purpose, but they're all different, right? And in the same way we shape that space, that overlap of you and me, that container, we create one for each interaction. And we do it on purpose because we can only show up or promise to the other person what we have available in our own self. And depending on what commitments we've already made to other people. So how many times have you found yourself totally involved and overwhelmed, and then you're just pissed off at the other person? And then maybe late at night you realize, like, oh, it wasn't even the other person, it's me. I agreed to all these things. Yeah, okay, that happened to me only once. But anyways, so that's when it's like, oh, it's my responsibility to make the container. So our goal with this creating containers is basically to become a boundary ninja. And so in time, we want to be both very generous and expansive, like, right, because we go on adventures. We're not holding back. That's like small misconnection. So we're going to be generous and expansive, but we don't lie to people either. We're going to tell the truth because we want to keep being able to show up. And so here's some thoughts about how to create the container. And sometimes when I'm just really challenged with a new crisis, I'll print this out and actually write it out, and then I can remind myself about it too. But our goal in time is to become that boundary ninja so we can create these containers on the fly. And again, it goes back to being able to feel into our body. Also, there's some brain work with creating the container because you have to be able to scan your week. Like, how many other commitments do you have? You know, how much am I taking care of myself this week? That sort of thing, so that we can be really truthful. And so then these are just some ideas for how we create the container. Because also, when a crisis happens, we can feel totally overwhelmed with that whole I don't have a choice thing. But then in reality, you can start to realize, well, there are choices for me here. This person that's asked for help, they don't live in my house or know my address. Okay, so then it is going to be an in-person thing, or it is going to be a phone thing, or I'm going to choose to extend it to a text-based thing. So all of these are choices that we make. And then we can make choices around how much time it is. Is this a one-off? Because isn't it freeing to be able to send the container of food home with your friend and not have to worry if that container comes back? And so in that same way, like, we can make these small containers to be like, this is just only for this moment. I'm totally going to show up hard for you right now and create this space and see you. And then it's, oh, you know, that's it. It's not beyond that. There's also, we have choice over what topics we show up for. And that's super important too, because we remember the why in the beginning. Sometimes we have the best parts of ourselves come from places that we've been very deeply hurt. And that doesn't mean I'm sharing that part with every single person. And if that's not a part of myself, this topic, then I don't need to bring it into that space. That's okay. There's somebody else who can do that. And also, depending on the setting we're in, there might be ethical or legal considerations as well. And then we're understanding what resources are available. Are we giving money to this time? You know, do I have connections I can give to someone? Am I making a referral to resources? So these can all help us in crafting the containers. How do folks feel about that? Does this feel doable? So who has a challenging scenario? I'm not going to ask you to say it. I'm just curious for a general check-in. How many people have a challenging scenario already on their mind that they're dealing with? Some people do. Okay, great. I would like us to take a moment, if you would turn the card over and do the X, and you quick already write down some container. It's like 30 seconds. Because you could work on this more later or chat about it with a friend later, but I would love for you to already feel like, yeah, I'm leaving with part of my container built.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 500 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. Now, back to our program.
Yeah, I don't know if people can hear all that comment, but he's saying you're doing this thing all day, every day, which the one thing I wanted to say when you said that, I said, oh, it's exhausting. So we talk about that next, but it's true. And so we don't have to always print it out. There's some things that we know over time, but I find it very helpful if something really big comes into my life that I take the time to write it out. And then also to reassess it over time. The other thing that's important about thinking about the container is it can change, because remember, we choose what we're doing. So it's always actually an active choice how we're engaging. And the time or resources we have available might change. And I have to go have a conversation. Maybe that's hard. Maybe it feels like I'm going to disappoint someone. Maybe it's scary. But we have to have a conversation and reshape the container. And because I showed up for somebody once with a certain container does not mean it's the same over time. Yes, we make commitments to our partners, our kids, few people in life. And those are different kinds of reshaping the container. But even those get reshaped over time. We make new agreements with partners. Our kids grow up. Our role with our mentee or our boss shifts, right? So even those really profound things shift the container. So it's quite okay for us to reshape containers with any engagement that we have. Okay, so the last tip then, or tool that I want to leave you with, and you really queued it up so nicely, so thank you very much. When you said, we're doing this all day, every day, and I said, oh yeah, that sounds exhausting. Yeah. So going back to, again, thinking about empathy being like a really muscular experience, one of the things that a compassionate witness does is they have to take care of themselves. And a lot of times we only think about self-care, so to speak, after the fact when we're already burnt out. And it's a reaction to what's happened. And I also am not super fan of the self-care language because I think it's gotten commercialized in so many ways. And so the way I like to think about this is investing in my own resiliency. And I'll draw the metaphor to this around having a savings plan. If you go to, no matter how much money you make, if you go to see a financial counselor, they're going to say, you need to automate a savings plan, right? How many times have you been told this? They're going to be like, $5 out of every paycheck, it goes in automatically because that's the way that we're going to build up that savings. And it's the same thing with our resiliency, that we have to automate these investments in our own resiliency. We can't wait till we're already burnt out. Yes, we're going to add some more things on when we're already burnt out, but we're going to say, I want to be able to show up as a compassionate witness. And so I'm making this conscious choice to invest in myself. And so a key hallmark of the compassionate witness is that they can take very good care of themselves. Because that's another thing that happens in that enmeshed, overwhelmed thing, is sometimes you're not clear who's taking care of whom and who's actually being served with it. And so this resiliency landscape is a way to start to think through, how is it that we invest in ourselves? And for so many of us who are givers, this is going to feel, I don't know how many of you look at this and like, oh, that's too much. I don't deserve that. I can't do that. I'm too busy. All these things. And it's like, well, then you can't actually commit to showing up to others because you have to be able to make these investments in yourself. And so we can make these plans. I have on the fly when needed. It's like really good to know what tools work for us right in a moment's notice. Going in the bathroom and closing the door and taking a deep breath or turning on music that's helpful for us. But what are my weekly investments in myself? I put them in green on my calendar, in that Google Calendar, so I can look and see. And that way, if a situation comes up and I need to make a container and I don't have green on my calendar, I better not be promising too much, right? Because I'm not going to be able to do it because I haven't already invested in myself. And then monthly and quarterly check-ins, and then also super important to know, what do we need in a crisis? And we should have no judgment or shame about any of these things. I used to think about myself like, oh, I'm a picky eater. And no, I like having these certain things to eat. And when it's a crisis, I know I have to have them or I'm not going to be able to do the things I need to do. I like going to sleep at 10 o'clock at night and waking up, you know, like you, it's okay to know these things. And what we do to invest in our own resilience is different for every person. And this is also a place in which we bring no judgment, both to ourselves or other people, about what it takes to invest our resilience. So we're almost out of time. Well, there's just going to be further questions, but I want to say all of these resources are on the website and they're free to download. And my real wish is that these tools are really accessible for people and that you can take them and talk about them in your leadership group, your friend group at work, and your family and your community. I'm also doing a free 30-day e-course starting February 1st. So if you want to sign up, there's going to be these like little nuggets that come into your inbox every day for 30 days in February. So it'll be like February and 2 days of March, I guess. Maybe we should have done a 28-day anyways. I don't know. It just now occurred to me and now it's too late. And finally, I want to say that the other thing that's just most important is for you to know that you already have everything that you need inside yourself. You know, I think there are things that we can go to class and learn more. And yes, we can go pay for a massage. And yes, there are these things where there's more. But really, everything that you have, that you need, you already have inside yourself. And that we can begin here right now to reimagine ourselves as a compassionate witness, as someone who can show up for others in a way that is profound and connected and healing and be able to do it for the long haul. I'm so committed to sharing this idea and I'm so pleased that you, so many people are here because I think now it's more important than ever that we're able to do this so that we can create the change that we want to make in the world. So thank you.
Yeah. I was just thinking of what this woman was saying, and because I know Shannon very well, one of the things that it made me think of was how remembering, like reminding yourself of what you have done before, and that conversation to get back to like, hey, but remember when, that you did that thing, okay. And then, you know, like bring the power of that back forward.
That's beautiful.
Just what that reminded me of.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you for speaking today, first of all. I was just wondering, you speak a lot about how empathy is a muscle, and so we have to keep practicing. But often when we are either learning or teaching, we have to measure our growth. Mm. So I was wondering how you would, like, obviously there's no, like, quantitative way you can measure mm-hmm. empathy, I'm sure, but if there's some way you can, like, check your progress as you try to build this muscle.
I'm terrible at evaluation. Like, really? I'm really not that good at it. I say that not so jokingly. Like, it's a good, I think that's a theme for me at work. I'm, like, really good at, like, starting something. I'm going to have a very hard time measuring it. Well, my question for you, it would be back to you in like, a mirror way. It's like, well, where is it that you want to go? And only you would know how you were doing and getting there. Because I think very similar to this, it's like not, the goal is not that there's going to be some cookie cutter compassionate witness army of people. It's that we're going to be embodied in the way that is our own best self, and we get to define that. And we all have different capacities for our emotional intelligence and for emotional labor, and that's also without judgment. People who have less on that, they're going to be really good at other things, and that's awesome. Go be, you know, they're going to maybe build buildings in a different way or have some other skill set, right? So I think that then it would really be for you to, and you could go to that deep reflection for yourself is like, well, am I where I want it to be today? And if I'm not, what's the small step I'll take to be closer to that tomorrow? And just always being gentle with yourself as you're on that journey, just like you would be to someone else.
If you're in touch with yourself, your intuition will tell you how much you're advancing and how much you come up short.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. It reminds me when you were bringing that up of like the storyboards, right? We make if we're creating something or these personas we make around other people. And is that familiar with folks when I say storyboards or personas? Yeah. And that reminds me like of the unicorn paintings. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the unicorn painting if that you wanted to see the view of the unicorn, but it's still, it's lacking that distance. And so I don't know if that feels useful for the folks that are doing the storyboard to make their, you know, marketing campaign. But I think to the personal work of connecting with someone and making change that it's not enough. And that how do we know is because we, one, won't see the change happening that we want, but mostly because we won't feel it our own selves. Like if we are wanting to create change and wanting to connect with others, we're going to feel that sense of dissatisfaction of like really missing the mark because it's not enough.
Okay. All right. I think we have time for one more question.
Hi, Shannon. Thank you. So I'm wondering what, in your experience, is your connection between compassion for yourself and the compassion that you're able to give to other people? Because I know sometimes compassion for ourselves is one of the hardest things. Mm-hmm. And it seems like as that grows, the compassion for others grows too.
Such a great point. Like, think maybe like the joke behind all of this is that the whole thing is about what we do for ourselves. And if our why is really about so focused on changing other people, and I was having this beautiful conversation with Jay, the most amazing midwife in Toronto who does street-based medicine, who's come in for this, and we were talking yesterday, we're like, sometimes when we're so focused on other people, it's because we're running away from the things we should be focusing on in our own life. And so I would say all of these tips we have to must apply to ourselves first so that we know how to do it for other people. I don't know if that goes back to the missing the mark too. And for people who haven't had that deep connection with their own self or have been deeply seen by someone else, if they're not also then able to do it. But yes, if we're going to be on this compassion for other people bandwagon and we have none for ourselves, it'd be really interesting to ask ourselves why.
Well, I want to thank Ms. Weber. It was a wonderful presentation. And unfortunately, we're out of time. Some applause for our delightful speaker. Shannon has said that she'll be happy to chat with people out there. If people have further questions, her book is out there. She'll be glad to inscribe it to you as well. So thank you very much. This is adjourned. Okay.